You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. One thing I see that surprises some people as they transition to retirement is how emotional the transition can be. It's a lot of inner work that can really help manage that transition and lead to a great retirement. Our guest today is Connie Zweig, PhD. She's the author of The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul. Connie is a retired psychotherapist, a former executive editor, a former columnist for Esquire magazine, and contributor to the LA Times. Known as the Shadow Expert, she is the co-author of Meeting the Shadow and Romancing the Shadow. She's also the author of Meeting the Shadow of Spirituality and a novel, Moth to the Flame, the life of the Sufi poet Rumi. She lives in California and joins us from there today. So Connie, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So I learned a great deal in reading your new book, The Inner Work of Age, Shifting from Role to Soul, one of the best subtitles I've come across quite a long time. How can retirement be a catalyst for an inner journey to reimagining life?
Well, that's such a good question. Role to soul is not my phrase. I want to give credit where it's due. It's a phrase from the spiritual teacher Ram Dass. And I heard it many decades ago, actually, Joe. And for some reason, it stayed with me. And when I was writing the book, it came back into my awareness because I realized that's the promise of the inner work of age. And that's the promise of the inner work of retirement. We mean that retirement or the end of paid work, because retirement certainly doesn't look like what it used to look like in our parents' generation, but the end of paid work is an opportunity that's kind of been hidden from us in this culture. Why? Because our culture is workaholic. It's all about productivity and achievement and success. And what happens is we internalize that as an identity. So, for example, I am a CEO, or I am a therapist, or I am a mom, or I am a nurse, or I am a teacher. And we believe over many decades, 30s, 40s, 50s, that we are what we do. And then we retire. And what we're seeing now is that the loss of the role, the loss of the work role or the family role, can be very traumatic for people. It can cause a feeling of disorientation and grief and lack of purpose. And, you know, we see now in my generation, the baby boom generation, there's an epidemic of depression and substance abuse. And some of this is circumstantial, but some of it is related to this loss of identity. And as I began to see that, as I did my research and interviewed hundreds of people for the book, I came up with the term a late life identity crisis. Everybody talks about a midlife crisis, but it happens again in late life, and especially with retirement. That's a key transition. When we end up asking the question, who am I? If I am not a salesperson, who am I? If I don't run an organization, who am I? If I'm not a provider to a family, who am I? And so this late life identity crisis arises, and we start to ask these existential questions again. And the consequences, as I said, can be really serious for our mental health and our physical health. So as I began to see that, I decided that there was one more book for me to write. There was one more contribution for me to make. And that was to begin to examine You know, my earlier books are about the shadow, meeting the shadow, romancing the shadow, and meeting the shadow of spirituality. And what does that mean? It means the personal unconscious that is outside of our awareness that holds a lot of our forbidden, taboo feelings and beliefs and images. If we have a lot of unconscious fears and images about aging and retirement, they're going to shape how we experience it. And that's when I realized that I had another book to write. And so retirement is a big chapter in the book, and it's particularly important because it so frequently triggers this late life identity crisis.
So one thing that jumped out to me in your book, among many, is my next question. What do the words retire and yoga have in common?
Well, they both imply drawing back to the source, to the self, pulling back to back from the outer world, the persona, the role, and toward something deeper. In yoga, that something deeper that we draw back to is the spiritual source. And in different traditions, there are different names for that. We could call it silent awareness or soul or spirit or the God within. With retirement, we haven't been taught to retire or to be. Actually, we have the word be retiring as kind of pejorative because it kind of means withdrawn. But we haven't really been taught or guided that to retire can mean to reconnect with our essential self, to reconnect with who we were and who we always are without all the doing, without all the trappings, without the image. I made that connection because it just seemed to me kind of like something missing in our language, in our education.
You wrote about the many obstacles, the inner obstacles we encounter on this inner journey. And you mentioned the shadow work. How would you explain shadow work?
Well, the shadows of age are kind of the body of the work, how we meet the unconscious obstacles, these internal obstacles that block us from aging consciously. What I did is I kind of, through the research, I kind of uncovered 10 or 12 primary obstacles and then developed the work to overcome them or work them through, as we say in psychology. So as an example, if we are in denial of aging, because that's primary, if we are in denial of our biological age and we are participating in the sort of youth-oriented culture that is very anti-aging messages in the media, in product development, in movies and television, in the culture at every level, it's in the institutions of healthcare, and even in the work environment where people are forced to retire due to ageism. If we internalize that messaging, then we develop an inner obstacle that I call the inner ageist. And my name for that is a shadow character. It's a part of our unconscious that we're not aware of, but that is influencing us unknowingly in the ways that we age, in our attitudes and our behaviors about aging and retirement. If our inner ageist is telling us, kind of whispering quietly, even subliminally, that young is good and old is bad, that work is good and retirement is bad, that people in retirement become useless or irrelevant or invisible, then that is affecting our choices, even outside of our conscious awareness. And it may be blocking us from letting go when it's time to make a transition, or from slowing down when it's time to work part-time. And so there are a dozen of those inner obstacles, which I call shadow characters, that can be related to our choices around retirement. And there's even research out of Yale University, a psychologist named Becca Levy, She spent her career over many decades studying the internalized ageism in people throughout the lifespan. And what she found is that unconscious beliefs and attitudes about retirement deeply shape how we experience it. And that kind of blew my mind, that she was able to track that in people over decades. So if someone sees a father or grandfather retire in a way that is, quote, negative to that child or that young adult, negative in the sense of it appears useless or it appears depressed, then that is internalized as an image about retirement. And I had a client who really struggled with that. And we kind of uncovered, he was 72. He was still running his insurance company. He was totally exhausted. He was missing time with his grandkids and he couldn't stop. And we explored and we uncovered in him this useless retiree shadow character. And he began to see that even outside of his conscious awareness, he was getting a message that retirement was bad. And as he began to work with that shadow character through my method called shadow work, it began to kind of loosen its grip over him. And eventually he was able to move to part-time, and then he was able to spend more time with his grandkids. And eventually he was able to retire when his vice president could take over. And he discovered that he loved painting, and it was a total surprise to him. And his retirement became about his creative life and his grandkids, and he was really pleased with it. But if he hadn't really explored the shadow that was keeping him from stopping, I'm not sure what would have happened. It would have been a different life.
So why is letting go so important, and why is it so challenging?
Well, letting go, so my framework in the book is that the shift from senior to elder in late life is a rite of passage. And we don't have rites of passage for elders in our culture, right? I mean, it just doesn't exist. So there are three stages of every rite of passage. And the first stage is letting go. And that might mean letting go of outworn roles or attitudes, letting go of outworn beliefs or self-images or relationships that don't work, or jobs or finances or goals of some kind. And so letting go at every stage of life is hard, because as humans, we bond and we get attached and we try to control, our egos try to control everything. But to become an elder, we actually need to let go of the ego's agenda and step into a different speed limit, a different pace of life, a different sense of flow. I call it from obligation to flow. And we need to let go of the past. A lot of people are clinging to the past, feel regret about the past, need to give and receive forgiveness about the past. So there's a chapter about how to do the emotional work to help us let go of the past so that we can live fully in the present now. Because many people don't know how to do that, don't really know how to be here and enjoy it fully. We might need to let go of some spiritual beliefs as we approach the end of our lives. Sometimes people have religious or spiritual beliefs that are outworn, that are archaic, they don't fit who they are now. And that letting go also can be difficult. I think I would say there's a lot of letting go, but the next step in the rite of passage is stepping into the uncertainty, the unknown. And that can be difficult too. That can be scary. And then re-emerging in a new beginning. And I call that the nobility of the elder. But if we don't go through the rite of passage of letting go and facing the uncertainty, we're not going to emerge with a new sense of ourselves in a new stage of life.
Connie, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you describe your own inner journey, retiring, we're all aging. What has it taught you?
What has it taught me? So many people, as I approached my late 60s, I began to feel disoriented. And I had been doing shadow work and spiritual practice for many, many decades. So it surprised me that I started to feel that way. And I didn't have any colleagues who were thinking about retirement, but I started to consider maybe there's something calling to me beyond my clinical practice. And so I just began to kind of contemplate, what would I need to let go of? What would I lose if I gave up my psychotherapy practice? And there were a lot of losses there to face because I loved my work and I loved my clients. I began to consider, what would I lose if I stopped writing, if I am no longer a writer and give up that role? What would it mean to my marriage? How would I spend my time? And so I took a couple of years and I just kind of continued to work and to kind of contemplate what this meant for me. And I went to a training with Saging International, a year-long training to become a sage or an elder. And it felt like an initiation to me. And it kind of gave me the reorientation I needed to let go of my paid work. And so, you know, I did that slowly with each client. And then I also realized from the elder training that nobody was really teaching what I had to offer, which was the orientation to the unconscious. And the kind of the call came to write another book and to extend my work on the shadow into midlife and beyond and kind of guide people on this journey with me that I'm taking as well. And so now I don't feel retired because I'm extremely busy. So the word retirement kind of, it's very individual these days. It means such different things to different people. And in the book, I am not telling people what retirement should mean to them or what they should do or not do. I'm not saying work less or work more, volunteer less or volunteer more, be creative more, I'm not doing that. It's a very individual process. What I'm suggesting is it's a time to contemplate and explore who you are now and whether you want to kind of use this time to deepen your spiritual identity, whether you want to use this time for contemplative practice rather than more doing. And that's my intention, Joe, when all the hubbub slows down from the book next year. My intention, I practice meditation an hour a day. I've done that since I was 19 years old. But my intention is to make that my priority beginning next year.
Less doing, more being.
Yes.
What about? Appreciate that. You have a beautiful letter at the end of your book to your grandchildren. What have you learned from grandparents?
Well, I was not a mother. I did not have biological children. I married Neil when his kids were teenagers. And now they're in their 30s and they have kids. So I feel really fortunate that I have this chance to be around little kids and to model for them how to be an elder. I didn't have that in my own life. I didn't have any positive modeling from elders. So one of the things I realized is that just my presence is affecting them. There's a 10-year-old little boy who I love very much, who's becoming quite anxious because of his family dynamic. And I just sit with him, and I sometimes think of it as a shady tree. He sits next to me in this shade of the tree, and he can feel my calm, and he can feel my presence and my love for him. And that's very different from doing. His parents you know, push him to go to school and push him to go to after school classes and sports and this and that. I'm just being with him. And I can feel his body kind of absorb the calm and settle down. I've learned that I can't step into family dynamics in either of these two families with my grandkids. Nobody wants to hear how I would do things or what I would feed them or what I would give them to read or anything else. Nobody wants to hear. So I'm learning how to have really good boundaries and honor the parents' choices.
So you mentioned being an elder. And what is an elder and how does one become one?
Well, again, I think this is very individual. But what I explore in the book is this. Everyone becomes a senior with a Medicare birthday. But becoming an elder is not an age, it's a stage. It requires intention and, you know, what I call inner work, so that there's a certain level of self-knowledge and awareness and ways of relating and a desire to give to the common good. Some people are activist elders and some are creative elders and some are spiritual elders. So we can give back our, we can transmit the knowledge of our lives in many different ways. But there is this impulse of generosity to give back. It has a lot of space in the book because I kind of look at it psychologically, developmentally. So let me give you an example. A woman who, let's say, is 55, is bitter and full of regret and wishing things were different and rigid in her thinking is not an elder. A man who is 55 and is continuing to learn and open to new ideas and available for personal change and really wants to serve something larger than himself, that person is an elder. So it's not about the age. And we could say the same thing of 75-year-olds. Someone can be 75, but closed down and rigid and bitter. That's not an elder. So from my point of view, it's someone who is open-minded and self-aware. And I guess there are a couple of other things I would add. Ideally, I would add has some kind of religious or spiritual practice to move beyond ego, and also has mortality awareness, is not in denial of death. Can't really be an elder without the recognition that we have a shortened time horizon and what that means for your priorities. So there are a lot of different qualities that go into it, and it's very individual, and it's not another role. It's not another role that we take on. Now I'm a volunteer with this charity. That doesn't make you an elder. It's an internal shift.
Of each of the three types that you mentioned, activist elders, creative elders, spiritual elders, is there one that you could share of each of those that resonates with you so people get a picture of what you're conveying?
Oh, I saw a video this week of Jane Fonda, who's 83, launching a new organization with Bill McKibben and the founder of 350.org and Greta Thunberg, the Swedish climate activist. And they're launching a climate organization for elders. And the way she spoke really modeled that for me. You know, she's not the angry protester she was in her 20s, but she has a kind of grounding from her life experience and a kind of wisdom about the limitations of that, what she can do. And at the same time, a voice, you know, the moral voice of the elder. the musicians who continue to compose incredible music in their 70s and 80s, like Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen and Mick Jagger and all the sort of folks from my generation who are still making music, just blow my mind. I don't know their stage of development, but I do know their creative development continues into this time of life. There are many, many spiritual elders. I would say that Ram Dass modeled, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he was, and baby boomers could get a sense of what was possible from that, of spiritual potential. And in his 60s and 70s and 80s, he did that even more. He was open in a kind of a raw way about his experience of having a stroke and how it affected his spiritual experience, his spiritual practices. And he moved into a wheelchair and he wrote about it and talked about it. So he, for me, he modeled spiritual elder. And there are others who do as well. I mean, certainly the Dalai Lama. But there's a way in which Ram Dass made it personal. He made himself transparent. And there was something about the authenticity of that that really spoke to me. And again, I come back to this is individual. So if you are in the Christian tradition or the Jewish tradition or the Buddhist or the Muslim tradition, there are practices in your lineage. They may be hidden. If you are in the sort of more exoteric, organized religious traditions, the practices may be hidden, but you can find them. They're in the mystical streams of your lineage. And what I would suggest is that you begin to pick up a practice that resonates with you, that speaks to who you are now. Not who you were in your 20s when you might have tried meditation or prayer, but now, who you are now. And so I would suggest that there are many practices in the book. I actually included them for people as a guide. And I'm hoping that some of them will actually speak to the readers directly and they'll know now it's time for me to pick that up. If you feel kind of unaffiliated, and you're not, or you reject religion, or you reject organized spirituality, and you're not interested in that, then what I would say is read widely, speak to people you know who are doing practices, and really just explore for the same sense of fit, for the same feeling of resonance. And you might need to try a few before you see what fits who you are. I mean, there's so many people doing mindfulness now, and that's great, but it's not for everybody. And so there's no one size fits all here. And so my suggestion is that you take the time to find a practice and begin to turn your attention from role to soul. Begin to turn your attention from I am what I do to I am that. I am that essential spiritual nature. And whatever term is comfortable for you, use that. If that's God within or spirit or soul or essence, use that so that you're comfortable and begin to practice saying to yourself, I'm not the doer. I'm not the provider. I'm not the, one of the shadow words is the driver. I'm not the CEO. I am a soul. I'm a soul on a journey. And I give some other examples in the book, like I am that which lives and breathes through everything. And begin to practice embodying that as you say it to yourself, really taking it in and letting go of the old identity and the old self-image, the past self-image. And see if you can slowly, slowly shift your awareness into that deeper identity and what that's like for you. There's a freedom there. There's an incredible gift there for all of us as we practice that. And that's what Ram Dass spoke about in very personal terms, how he began to experience that more and more and more and that his illness actually expedited that experience because he couldn't be his body anymore. And he couldn't be his cello playing or his car, sports car driving past self. And so he began to experience this identity that he'd been talking about for 5 decades. So it's, there's nothing quick and easy here, but it is a perennial teaching in all of the traditions that the purpose of late life is contemplation and spiritual practice. You know, if you're in a monastic tradition, you go to the monastery. But even in other traditions where there's now the possibility that we can do these practices in our homes, with our families, with our comforts, and without deprivation. And so there's something incredible about that. But that's the message that I really want to convey, that the new longevity, the many years after retirement, offer us emotional and spiritual development and the luxury of time to cultivate that if we're called to do so.
And that's such a great message. Is there any other message that you think is key to your book that you'd want people to hear?
The last person I spoke with before you today said she's having to really chew it and digest it. It's not a quick read. It calls you to stop and contemplate your life. So you learn how to do a life review. You learn how to do emotional repair. You learn how to do spiritual unfinished business. And you contemplate life completion. What is a complete life, a fulfilled life for you? And what can you do about that now? What steps do you need to take to actually move toward that now? And it's an invitation to the reader to use this time well.
Well, in contrast to the last person you spoke with, I just have to share, I devoured your book and ready for second. So I'm going to reread it with more contemplation. But it is
wonderful,
very rich and a great resource for anyone who's lucky enough to be in the later part of life. And as you said, what jumped out to me, being an elder is not an age, it's a stage. So
yes,
you get a real clear picture of all those things. Connie, thanks so much for taking the time and sharing your wisdom with us today.
Joe, I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Dr. Connie Zweig for sharing her wisdom and insights with all of us today. If you're like many people, you may be thinking about retirement as the last day of school with excitement and anticipation. But today's conversation is a reminder that to have a great retirement and that move into that phase of life takes some inner work, reflection, introspection, and contemplation. I'd like to share 4 highlights that I think can lead to some interesting questions to consider based on the conversation today. First one is really acknowledging that the transition to retirement comes with a lot of loss. Retirement comes with freedom and plenty of other positives, but there's often a loss of your work role, a loss of identity, and a loss of purpose, as Connie Zweig pointed out today. It can be really disorienting. So be prepared for what might you lose that you'd need to replace in some new, different way. Second thing that got my attention is her commentary about we all have an inner ageist. And this inner ageism can be based on our beliefs about retirement, about aging. So what about your beliefs about retirement and aging? Are they accurate? Should you challenge them? And is it time to upgrade them like you would software on all your devices? You don't want to enter retirement with the equivalent of iOS 2.37. You need to update your beliefs about this phase of life. Third, letting go. It's going to be a challenging one. But what do you think you'll need to let go of? And what can you start letting go of today? Preparation, anticipation of retirement life. And finally, that was very interesting. We talked about becoming an elder and that it's not an age, it's a stage. So what traits will you want to cultivate so that you can become an elder? Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can find all of our episodes on our website at retirementwisdom.com. You'll also find free tools and links to schedule a call if you'd like to talk about designing your new life, either in my one-on-one coaching program or a group program that we're launching. Thanks again for listening to Retirement Wisdom Podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.